Support for WPR comes from Present Music, performing honest music with guest violist and curator Nadia Sirota, May 9th at 8 at the Milwaukee Art Museum. Tickets and info are at presentmusic.org.
Support for WPR comes from The Alliance, a not-for-profit cooperative that contracts with over 39,000 healthcare providers on its employers' behalf to help them access healthcare. The-Alliance.org.
Today we're talking about the language of food with chefs who write and novelists who cook, beginning with Michelle Wilgin, a novelist and executive editor at Tin House Literary Magazine. She lives here in Madison, and she's just written a novel called Bread and Butter, a hilarious peek at the inside workings of restaurant kitchens, told through the eyes of three brothers with rival restaurants. Here's how it begins.
Winesap was carefully positioned between blowout expensive and pleasantly upscale. In choosing the location, Leo had ensured that no strip malls were nearby, for example. Because it was awful, walking into a mall and dropping $200 on lamb shank and Barolo in the shadow of a Radio Shack. When the restaurant was about 3 years old, Leo had told the chef Kenneth to start making his own pasta. And 2 weeks later, Britt entered the kitchen to find two women, one ancient and one about 40, set up near the walk-in, chatting in Italian and rolling satiny yellow sheets to be cut into tagliatelle. Weeknight sales rose accordingly.
Michelle, tell me about the restaurant at the heart of your book. Well, there are two, but tell us about the first restaurant that we meet, Winesap.
Yes. Well, at this point, Winesap is about 10 years old, and it's run by the two brothers, Britt and Leo. And they were pioneers, but now they've perhaps gotten just a little bit unfocused and maybe just a little bit complacent.
And along comes their younger brother, yes. Harry, the black sheep of the family.
Yes, Harry is the one who has been off collecting many more college degrees than most people need, as the book says. So when he appears and says, listen, I'm opening my own restaurant, they are not really interested in helping him out or partnering with him.
Well, it's primarily a story of these rich relationships between the three brothers. But one of the pleasures of reading Bread and Butter is vicariously enjoying all of the food. I was curious about what kind of research you did. Did you just immerse yourself in food? Did you go back and forth between stove and computer all the time?
You know, I drew a lot on just memorable meals that I had had, and then I often just sort of let my imagination do it. So, you know, there are some dishes that I don't know if they would even work. I mean,
really?
I suppose
like
if I
what?
Gave them, well, there's one where there is like a kaffir lime leaf powder, and it's used in a Napoleon with, I think, coconut milk. And I have never talked to a chef and found out if this is even remotely possible. It may not be. And I've been waiting for somebody to be like, that can't happen.
Sounds yeah. wonderful.
Well, I think, you know, people can do so much. I'm sure somebody somewhere can do that. Harry left the lamb's neck on the menu, but he could not stop tweaking it. He tried it with artichokes, with toasts and little coins of new potato. He tried it with no starch at all, just carrot and parsley. He tried skewing it sweet tart with gooseberries and skewing it savory and dark with thyme and garlic and braised cipollini onions. Nothing revealed itself to Harry as the obvious course of action. He liked the dish no matter what. He would eat it no matter what. And he knew that this was a problem. A chef should be able to break down a dish to its components in a few bites, not view it as a mere lump of tastiness that had just appeared on a plate. The more Harry tried to fix it, the more confused he became.
Wow, break down a dish into its components. It sounds like architecture.
Yeah, or just like, you know, you teach students how to read like writers, and instead of it just being like, ah, there was one full experience, you know, you have to be able to decide how did the writer get that experience, and a chef can do the same. How did the chef make this, you know, have the effect that it has?
Are you the kind of person who reads cookbooks for fun?
Oh, I am. I get a lot from the library, and then I just sit there and page through them because a little pop in my brain happens when I see a food word. If I see the word like cream, or if I see, I don't know, like the name of a wine, I just am like, oh, it makes me happy. And I think a lot of people are like that. There is something immediately sensual about it and something pleasurable. You know, I mean, we need food. It's pretty obviously deep in our brains that we're going to respond well to that. So for the vast majority of us, I think it's just a sensual pleasure that makes us happy, even just to have it floating in the background. The first desserts were now moving past him, and Britt raised his eyebrows at a server to signal her to slow down and let him look at the plates. The beignet, a generous little pile of sugared pastry next to their glass cup of basil cream. The pears all plump, feminine roundness beneath a veil of warmed dulce de leche. He watched Joshua serve a table of four, placing a dish at an empty seat whose occupant had gone to the restroom. Britt sighed. When Joshua saw Britt watching, he reddened and sidled over to him. "She keeps leaving," he muttered under the din. "Is she feeding a freaking pet back there or what?"
Your characters are not only chefs, they're also restaurateurs. They work the front of the house, they hire and fire staff, they pay incredibly minute attention, not just to the food, but to the entire dining experience in their restaurants. And I have to say, that was kind of a revelation to me.
That was, I think, a big reason why I wanted to write about it, because that's been a really interesting part of this whole restaurant revolution that's happened in the U.S. in the last several years, which is that you can go out for a dinner at a place where you're not going to spend $300 a person, but the same kind of attention has still gone into creating a certain kind of theater, you know, because now people very specifically are trying to show you who they are by how the waitstaff looks or exactly, you know, what they're saying on the menu and that kind of thing. And it's all of this sort of shorthand, and it's a kind of theater, and we just accept it because we've learn this language without even intending to.
So what for you goes into outstanding service? I mean, what annoys you if you go out?
Oh, yes, I have many things. The things that annoy me are if I ask a waiter or waitress what's good or what's especially interesting, what I'm asking is, you know this kitchen or you should. I expect for you to say everything is great, but I want to know what is especially well done. And I absolutely cannot stand it when the server says, "Oh, well, that depends on what you're in the mood for." I was just like, yes, I'm aware I have tastes and they might not be the same as yours, but this is why you're here.
As a restaurant diner reading your book, I find it kind of alarming how much your characters know about the patrons at the restaurants. I mean, how much can you really tell about, say, a party at a table after just one night?
You know, I do think you can see things. I wrote an essay about this one time about a couple on a first date when I was waiting tables. And it was a terribly awkward date. Or maybe it was just a last date. I don't know. I said first date because it felt to me like a blind date that wasn't going very well. It was just silence at the table and they didn't seem to be enjoying the food. And then the woman got up to go to the restroom before the main course and she never came back. And... And yet I have to admit, I wasn't surprised. I was shocked because I never thought anyone actually did that in real life. But, you know, you could just feel you can read a table very quickly and you can sort of see how people are behaving with one another. And it's a really fascinating sort of human experiment.
Well, it's great training for a novelist.
Exactly. Which is good because most of us wait tables at some point. And perhaps will again. You never know.
Michelle Wilgen's novel Bread and Butter is just out in paper. The film adaptation of her novel You're Not You, starring Hilary Swank, opens this weekend. Michelle will be back a little later in the hour talking with one of her real-life culinary heroes, Alice Waters, the founder of Chez Panisse, the restaurant that launched a revolution in American eating.